The news comes to talk. It's the Round Table. Round one at 7:45. Round two at 8:45. Weekday mornings and on in the morning.
And we are joined on round one by Robert Turner, of course, of the early edition, and the producer here on the Moore in the Morning, Amanda Galbraith, formerly of the mayor's office, with Navigator now, Melissa Lantzman, VP of Public Affairs at Hill & Knowlton Strategies, and Jerry Agar. Here from the Jerry Agar Show. Good morning, y'all.
Morning.
Morning.
Can we start with the story in Brampton is developing, and I know police had an update. We'll get to some of that presently, but the other issue, the ancillary part of this conversation, is around the Amber Alert. And Jerry, it seems to me that we can never get through an Amber Alert story without the Amber Alert system being criticized. And if you do criticize it, somehow you're in favor of having kids abducted. It just turns into a really emotional conversation in a hurry.
Yeah, whether or not they did it soon enough, I think we don't know yet. We would need to get a real definitive timeline of things, and I don't know that we have that or that the police could have put it out earlier. I am one of those people that was awakened by the Amber Alert, and I think if you are upset, ticked off, because the Amber Alert woke you up, get over yourself.
Yeah, I guess so. But the other part of it is whether or not it's effective, Amanda, to look at the notion that if you were in a dead sleep, how likely was it that you were going to get up and start walking around the neighborhood in Orillia and do it? I can see that maybe it should be focused on radio, TV, other media. I'm driving around. It makes sense. So there is a way to do this, to fix it and perhaps make it more effective.
You know, I was woken up too from a dead sleep. And frankly, maybe there's 1% of someone who saw something or looked outside the window. So I'd rather, if that was my nieces, one of my nieces was gone, I would rather wake everybody up to make sure they're okay. And I think you ask any parent or anyone who knows about a child, people should suck it up. And those people that called 911, like frankly, like that disgusts me that they're going to call 911 to complain, tie up an operator who should be doing other stuff. And we already know 911 is overwhelmed. Like this story, I can't even believe, frankly.
Melissa, the issue that people are turning to is police are saying, well, this worked because the tips that came in as a result of the Amber Alert, we found the car, we found the father involved in this story, so it worked. There are people pointing out the point of Amber Alerts is to save the child, not necessarily to arrest
somebody.
Yeah,
look, I think Jerry's right. I think we don't know yet whether they did it early enough. I was also woken up, but there's plenty of people out there who are still, you know, working the night shift. And at the time where they found this girl, unfortunately, and that's sort of the sad part of this story, they were also putting the dad in handcuffs, you know, in Orillia at the time. So they got him. People in Orillia noted that his car was there. You know, so to an extent, it did work because this guy today is off the streets and he's going to face justice.
Robert, the other part of this story is that we can get distracted from the actual story at hand, which is the domestic issue that led to this, the little girl being murdered. And we spend way too much time in the weeds talking about whether or not the alert went at the right time. It wouldn't have necessarily changed the investigation.
No, but you need to look at that, right? You need to look at when did it all happen from, and I would assume they assessed that with all of these cases to see, you know, could this have been done better? But I missed the first two tests. Remember they did the test and said, we're going to send one out to the cell. I didn't get it. The first two times I didn't get it. So I thought I had been selected to be left behind if there was a disaster. All the phones in the house went off, the TV went off. It worked like it was supposed to. And had this been a situation where there's some sort of, you know, there's been a train derailment or a plane crash and there's a toxic cloud and they needed to move people out of part of the city or something. That's the good news part of the story is that it did work. It did wake people up. That's what it's supposed to do.
Well, but here's what I can't figure out. I've been trying to figure it out this morning because what happened is it went off. I woke up and I thought somebody was calling me and I looked at my phone. I use it for my alarm. So that's
probably
why
figured it was me, but no, I was in.
Yeah,
this morning
for
the early edition.
Saying I can't do the early edition. You have to come in and do it because that happens all the time. And then I realized what it was and I thought, okay, but then I set my phone up on silent because I figured from my bed, I couldn't help. So I wasn't upset that I was awakened by it. I don't know yet whether the system can overcome that on my phone.
Did you get the second response saying
well,
it had ended?
Well, I think I got responses, yeah. But it didn't, you know, I saw that in the morning when I got up. So If, in fact, you can put your phone on silent, the alarm overcomes that. I don't know if the Amber Alert overcomes that. I've been trying to figure that out.
Yeah, there's people on the text board saying yes, no, so that
yeah, so nobody knows.
Hasn't been solved yet. Let's get into the conversation about Sidewalk Labs. And for those of you who are just joining us, what the hell is Sidewalk Labs? They are involved in an agreement or the plan to develop part of the Portlands here in the city of Toronto. And essentially what they would do is develop what is being termed as a smart neighborhood. And there are all kinds of innovations around it, the whole idea that this is how we would create new housing, new community, safer, more accessible community, and it's driven by data. So that's at the heart of it. And Sidewalk Labs is an Alphabet company, as is Google. So that is the background to this story. This has been going on since October of 2017. When Sidewalk Labs signed the agreement, I think with Amanda, you will know whether it was the city or was it with
Waterfront Toronto.
So, and they are the ones who are overseeing the whole thing. And of course, Waterfront Toronto is, part of it is the city, is the province, and is the federal government. So all these were representatives. A lot of worms in this can. The point being, how do you develop this property, et cetera? There were always questions about whether or not Sidewalk Labs was going to have control of the data. They're saying no. But now the Toronto Star is reporting that there was a plan to go well beyond the 12 acres, that in fact it extends to 350 acres. It would involve a new LRT, new infrastructure that would be critical to the development of the area, and Sidewalk Labs would in fact be paid through property taxes as the lands are developed. Jerry, on the one hand, I think this is a great idea.
Well, I don't know, because I live in a dumb neighborhood. As opposed to smart.
No way.
All.
You're the smartest man there.
I think it is the first step, Jerry.
But all right. I'll tell you what.
There's a lot to understand here. It's a ginormous project, so to speak. But I get uncomfortable with the idea of somebody coming in and they're getting a share of the taxes. Look, this can all be looking like some new spiffy thing because it's Google and it's a smart neighborhood and blah, blah, blah. But in the end, what we're talking about here is a developer. Okay, I'm pro-developer, but I also think developers develop land and they pay development fees, and they pay taxes. They don't collect them, they pay them. Does that make sense?
So you think government's going to do a better job of it? Because this sounds to me like the private sector wants to get involved at the front end and then have a piece later.
You know what? Let them develop and let them do what developers do. Government can get out of the way. They aren't some kind of special developer.
Well, look, I'm not an expert on this. I just know that Kristen Wong Tam and Gord Perk seem to be against it on Twitter. So I'm kind of like, there's probably some good here. But part of this is Google's headquarters in Toronto is going to go to this. When they do this, that's the plan, is they would move their headquarters there, right? And GM's pulling out of Oshawa, and I just wonder, would GM be pulling out of Oshawa if they had a stake in Oshawa surviving and they were getting revenue from taxes in Oshawa because they'd help develop?
You know what, Robert?
This is a new model.
I'm glad you brought them up, because we did corporate welfare for them, and where did it get us? Okay, so now we're going to do it for Google?
But this is ongoing.
But to be clear, and I will say, I do work with Sidewalk, so I've got a bit more information about it. But this isn't corporate welfare, right? What they're coming in is saying, we're going to invest in the front end, unlike what most notable, including building an LRT, which won't be built for decades. We're going to kickstart the development of the land down there, which won't happen. It's been laying fallow for years. It's impossible to develop the normal way. So they've been asked by the Waterfront Toronto, take a look at it. And this is an option of what they're going to do. It's not approved. It's not even a full proposal. The plans, this is sort of a concept. And I think we should take a look at it. What we should not do is drive out businesses and drive out innovation when we need this kind of stuff to happen in Toronto.
This is, this is something that the developer's taking on all of the front end risk here.
But to be clear, they're not developing it. They're the ones who are going to go and put the infrastructure down and let somebody else develop the property.
Correct. Most of it, yeah. But it's an LRT that would otherwise take 20 years to build, if that. We've been talking about developing the waterfront certainly since I was in urban planning school here in Toronto, and probably 50 years before that. Nobody goes there. Why not bring a private sector partner that wants to do something there, that wants to bring people back to the waterfront? And that's what we're talking about.
Just don't make a bad deal. Isn't it the cost and the price? I mean, just don't make a bad deal.
You know what? If you look historically, every time some big pizzazzy project comes along, whether it's sports development or this kind of thing, and oh my God, look what the developer's going to do, and look what it's going to do for the community, you find out that over a decade or two decades, ultimately the taxpayers got screwed.
I'm just really surprised you think the government's going to do a better job, because that sort of goes against everything I've ever heard you say.
Well, okay, I will repeat to you, Robert, the point you didn't listen to, which is get the government out of the way, let developers develop a project off which they can make money, but not to the point where you make the taxpayer the developer.
But to be clear, whether it's Google or not, it was going to be private sector that was going to develop this. Not the government is not in the business of developing property. They're in the business of regulating it and planning it and all that sort of thing. So it was always going to be private sector that was going to be involved in this.
And so here's the thing that Sidewalk has to do. They have to show that they're here for a long time and not just a good time. And that's particular to the Canadian
example. How do they do
that?
Well, they're standing in line for 30 years to get $6 billion.
No, well, we got all kinds of promises from the auto companies, too. And then companies just say, oh, well, not going to fulfill our promise. What are you going to do about it?
Well, if they're actually being paid on the money. Right.
They get the money first, Robert.
No, they get the money ongoing.
It's in the back end.
There's always, I'm telling you, the history of these things.
I watch Scooby-Doo, too. I don't like property developers, but
no,
I get it.
I do like property developers. It's just that if you give a developer, if you give any business a chance to take taxpayer dollars, they will do it because that's their job. And so what I'm saying is get the government out of the way, let them do all the development they can and make money off of it.
But Jerry, it hasn't worked so far. Like, no, it's an incredibly difficult place to develop because it needs to be remediated, because there's no access to transit. Like, developers take a look at it now and it's laid fallow for 20 years. It's not happening. And it should happen in this city.
Have we had a situation where it hasn't happened because the government has taken a hands-off approach?
No, anyone can say we want to go down there and buy this or do this or whatever. People aren't doing it.
And then we listen to Gord Perks and Kristen Wong Tam.
You and Gord and Kristen Wong Tam should walk hand in hand together.
We have a completely different way of looking at this.
At the end of the day, the government needs to approve all of this.
Yeah,
they've got constituents to answer to. So
what's clear is that they don't have to approve it. They have to understand it. So we've just gone around on this on 8 minutes, and I'm not sure we've solved anything. Dan Doktorov, by the way, is the CEO of Sidewalk Labs. He's going to join us in the next hour. We got about 90 seconds here. Can we just get a quick go around on Lisa McLeod's apology, Robert?
Oh, sort of an apology.
Sort of an apology. It just occurs to me that as I watch this, the autism file is just the one that you do not want to have in government. There just doesn't seem to be a good answer for any of this. Amanda?
Yeah, I think, listen, nobody takes on this file assuming there's a win anybody politically. I think the minister is trying to do the best thing that she can. It's a tough issue with the stakeholders and the parents, and, you know, things sometimes get complicated.
The problem, I think, Melissa, is the premier didn't help yesterday when he immediately went to the financial implications of this as opposed to dealing with the parents
but
and the kids.
The
as
premier
people.
Has a point on this, and we've got to ask ourselves, does the province have what it takes to give services, to give these kinds of services or the kinds of services that every child with autism needs? The answer might be no, but this is a step in the right direction. Lisa McLeod has a tough, conglomerate of ministries. It's like the ministries of tears, and I think she's doing the best she can.
But is that the responsibility, I guess, Jerry, is the other underlying question for the government to deal with this?
Well, if you were going to properly fund autism, you would have to spend multiples of what we've ever spent.
Right.
And in order to do that, you're going to have to figure out what you're not spending money on. And that's the thing that politicians have a hard time making a decision on. Like, I put forth the proposal, we've got the money. Let's cancel all-day kindergarten. We got along fine without it before it got jammed upon us. It's basically a daycare program. So what's more important to you, a daycare program or helping autistic kids? I want my tax dollars to go to the autistic kids. You cancel that and you've got the money for autism.
But even
chance of that happening is almost zero.
Even when we didn't have all-day kindergarten, we didn't help the kids with autism.
Right,
so
but at least now they have
around.
The money.
Catch the round table. Round one at 7:45. Round two at 8:45. Weekday mornings on More in the Morning. In-depth radio. News Talk 1010.